This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
To Be Nation Pop. It's another edition of the Sellers Points podcast. I am, of course, your host, Russell Sellers, and with me, as always, my illustrious Ginger Bear co-host, Mr. Kelly Poole. Kelly, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm good.
He's totally wired, folks. He's just downed like six cups of coffee. He's going to be like bouncing off the walls throughout this whole episode. He's going to be doing his cannonball impression later, which is going to be fitting because this is an issue of The Missed and the Maligned, and we're going to be talking about, in honor of course of Wolverine Month here on Place to Be Nation Pop Comics Feed, all about the 2009 animated series Wolverine and the X-Men, the unfortunately only single season of this show. But we will be getting in deep on this one and talking about its comparison to other shows, how its treatment of Wolverine, you know, just the whole nine. So with that, of course, let's just get right into to talking about this this show that originally aired, as I said, in 2009 on Nicktoons, although it was produced by Disney, just like, you know, pretty much all of the Marvel animated series were after Disney purchased Marvel way back when. So, with that, let's talk about our general impressions of this show. Because, Kelly, off-air, you were telling me you watched this show back in 2009 as it aired. And I didn't come to it until later. I didn't discover the series until well after it was over. So, what was your general impression of it, your first impression whenever you you first saw it?
Well, when I first saw it, you know, I thought, well, okay, here we go. They're, of course, they're throwing Wolverine out front because, you know, that's how they're going to, you know, get folks. And, you know, it's just going to be Wolverine and friends, you know, kind of like the way, you know, Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends were back in the 80s. But, it had a really interesting story. After the first few episodes, I was like, well, okay, this is not a, this isn't, obviously they're alluding to something that happened and, you know, the X-Men kind of are all kind of scattered. And, that to me was the one thing, even though I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like I didn't like the show, but it wasn't like the kind of enthusiasm and the kind of anticipation I had for, say, Justice League or Justice League Unlimited or, you know, the Teen Titans, things like that, that really I got into. But the strongest thing for me for this this show was the fact that they went against the norm and said, I mean, if you ever watch any of the previous X-Men series, it's a group ensemble and you've got Professor X or you've got the team. They're all together and they go out and they, whatever, they react to whatever is thrown at them. And this was like Wolverine was kind of like, okay, I've got to get the band back together. This, you know, this whole situation is not good and things are happening and, you know, really it's just him and Beast in the first few episodes. And he's managing, I think, you know, to, you know, try to get Scott. It takes a while to get Scott pulled back in because Scott's in this bad place because of what happened to Jean. And it you know,
yeah,
to me, the story itself is really, I think the best thing about it, you know, I you know, to me, the story is what kind of kept me kind of coming back, you know, because I mean, it just was different than any other the other X-Men incarnations of a cartoon series, you know.
Certainly, and I mean, where the previous X-Men series to this one, which would have been the 90s X-Men series and X-Men Evolution. Mm-hmm. In both of those series, Wolverine is, you know, he is a central figure, but he's more of a loner type, you know, much like he was in the Claremont and Byrne X-Men series, the X-Men comics that, you know, are beloved deeply by many. Wolverine is not the central player in the story. He's there, he plays an important role, but the story isn't, you know, centered on him. And this story takes Wolverine and puts him into that central leadership position, something that hadn't really been done all that much up to this point. Because Wolverine's always been thought of as a loner, as a, you know, a Ronin, if you will, especially if, you know, if you take into account the Frank Miller and Chris Claremont series that really emphasize that. And that comic series actually does have some influence on this show, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But initially, my impression of the show was that it did start off kind of slow. There was it has a three-part first episode, honestly. It's three episodes that all follow the same opening story arc where, as you said, Wolverine and Beast are trying to get the band back together after a pretty awful incident in the first episode that has a giant explosion happen at the X-Mansion, levels the mansion, Professor X disappears, and as does Jean Grey. Like, the two telepaths are gone. Now, it doesn't really say that anybody else died at that point. It's just those two characters have disappeared. Now, we do learn a bit later that Professor X is in a coma, and there's this big mystery that I don't want to spoil in case somebody listening to this wants to go and watch the show. There is a bigger mystery that revolves around Jean Grey, and it's reminiscent of a pretty popular and famous X-Men story from the comics, and it's one that I would encourage people to check out. But like I said, it started off kind of slow in those first three episodes, but it picks up really well, and it's a virtual who's who of great X-Men characters, and in my opinion, it's pretty fantastic storytelling. Because like I said, Killer, the plot of the show is actually very good. It keeps things rolling forward, and they get through a lot of story in a short amount of time. And, you know, it did have pretty good ratings to begin with, but I think some who were hoping for a continuation of X-Men Evolution were probably a little miffed. It turned out to be more in line with the X-Men films of the early and mid aughts, or if you will, the early 2000s. And the 90s TV show more so than X-Men Evolution. Though it does share an animation style, and several of the producers and writers of X-Men Evolution did go on to do this show. Why do you think that more people didn't try this show out? Because its ratings did kind of dip off after those first couple of episodes. What was it that you think made people kind of walk away from it?
You know, I never finished watching the series. For me at least, something about the story I fell off of it. I just didn't, even though it was, you know, in the beginning, it really and truthfully kind of caught me off guard, of course, because it was different than any of your other X-Men shows. It just didn't have the staying power to keep me riveted to watch it. And you know, I can't really put my finger on. I'm not going to say I think the stories just became more and more kind of I don't know. Maybe they just were light on substance. Maybe I just, you know, I remember a couple episodes I watched there towards the end where I was really just not interested. It couldn't keep my interest, you know, overall. And that's, you know, that happens not just – that happens with any show. I mean, I can say – and this may get a lot of folks out there a little, you know, little ruffled. It might ruffle their feathers a bit, but Walking Dead – I couldn't make it past the, I think, you know, I got up to the prison season, and I had to make myself, you know, kind of watch those episodes. And it was after that, I was like, I'm just done. This show cannot keep me anymore. I mean, you know, and that happens. And that's just something, you know, it's up to every individual, because everyone has a different taste and, sure, what keeps their attention and what doesn't. And I think for the X-Men, their stories just became less and less interesting. And I just quit watching.
And that could be chalked up too, to like, maybe it just wasn't what you were in the mood for at the time. And,
oh yeah.
And
yeah.
That has happened to me certainly. And that, it's funny that you mentioned the prison season of Walking Dead, on the TV show. 'Cause that's actually about where I parted ways with the comic. As soon as they get out of the prison and are moving on from that, which is also the end of the governor's story arc, I just didn't care about Walking Dead anymore. As far as the comic goes, the TV show has held my attention a good bit longer, though I do have plenty of quibbles I can go on about that, most of them having to do with a certain dumpster dive survival moment that I consider a real jump the shark moment for that show, but yeah, but I digress. Magic dumpster dive and you survive. That's a bunch of bullshit.
We could do that. We could do an episode on that maybe down the road.
Oh dear God. Like it'll just be one long hour and a half rant, and I don't know that anybody wants to sit through me incessantly bitching about how the fuck did you survive by sitting under there, and there are walkers all around you. Anywho, this is about Wolverine, and anyway, my personal feelings is that the reason people didn't really keep watching the show was because, it was 2009, and it was the same time that X-Men Origins Wolverine had dropped, and pretty much and almost single-handedly killed the X-Men movie franchise. I mean, it was critically and you know, pretty much all my fans too, just completely panned across the board. Nobody liked this movie. Which is probably too strong a statement, because there are people out there who will defend that film. I've seen their defenses of it, and yeah. But anyway, it's as bad as that movie is. When you watch something like this show, Wolverine and X-Men, this is way better. You know, this is something that you would think X-Men fans would have been like, this is a nice palate cleanser from that giant turd I just sat in a theater and watched, and it's. It's even got some of that 90s X-Men nostalgia mixed into it. But, you know, there's also that possibility, like, you know, how you were feeling around that time. Maybe people just felt burned out on X-Men because they were kind of everywhere at that point.
That's a good point.
They were, you know, big in theaters. People were really pushing them pretty hard. I think there was a big comic storyline going on in 09, too, but I want to say that was maybe Nation X was around that time.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually a pretty good story. Now that I think back on it, I enjoyed that. But that's one reason I can see that people might have said, "Yeah, this is not for me." It wound up costing you know, the show a second season, where it probably would have really hit its stride. But on that note, there is a guy who plays on this show. The guy who does the voice of Wolverine, his name is Steve Bloom. this is not the only time he voiced Wolverine. He's actually had quite a long tenure with the character on a couple of different shows, as well as in several different video games, including X-Men Legends and Marvel Ultimate Alliance. And a couple of, I think probably a couple of other video games too. Like he's got quite a bit of history of voicing this character. But maybe he's not, you know, despite the fact that he's done it for a long time, maybe he's not the most iconic. What do you think about him versus, let's say Cal Dodd, who voiced Wolverine back in the 90s animated series? How do you think they compare and contrast as performers and as overall voice characterization?
I think that both voice actors did a good job voicing the character. You know, to me, a lot of times, you know, voice acting is kind of hit or miss and can really damage a show. That's definitely one of the things that when you're going into an animated series now, voice acting is extremely important. And, you know, that's why we have so many great voice actors. You know, but when you're looking at maybe in the 80s and, you know, cartoons of that era, you know, they didn't really look too much. I mean, voice acting was important, but it wasn't as it is like for now when you have iconic characters that you're voicing. But I think both of them, I can't pick one over the other as far as who did it better. Because sure. I think they both did a good job doing the voice. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, Wolverine is, you know, you gotta find the right person to do the voice. And I think when they were choosing these two individuals, they got it right. You know, just like with Kevin Conroy, who has and always will be the voice of Batman to me.
Sure.
That's kind of where I put these guys up. They're up there with, like, you know, Kevin Conroy Tim Daly for Superman and Clancy Brown for Lex. You know, I mean,
and it's funny you should mention Clancy Brown, because he actually does a voice on this show. He does the voice of Mr. Sinister.
See, that's again perfect. You know, I mean, the show did have, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, I don't dislike this show. After I went back, Russell was nice enough and got me a copy of the first season, or the only season. Yeah. And I sat down one night and spent about 5 hours watching, you know, episodes. And it was kind of nostalgic in a way, because I said, I remember this, you know, you know, of course I'm going to sit down and finish it, because, you know, I have it now in my library. But I'm sure that probably when I finish watching it, I'll probably have a different view on it, because I didn't realize it until you said it, Russell, that, you know, that horrible movie came out around the same time. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really bad. In fact, I remember, this was back, of course, when I had my shop, that a friend of mine, I won't name, had managed to get a, you know, because they had that big stink about it getting leaked.
Yeah.
And
what would you say? Know, less than savory means were used in order to acquire a copy.
Right. And there was a viewing of Wolverine Origins at my shop. Now, I didn't have concessions. I didn't make a dime on it. You know, but there were a few of the regulars, and my friend who found the copy of it, and they watched it. And I, you know, of course, was running the shop, so I couldn't just sit there and pay attention, but I would catch moments of it. And Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. Yep. But, you know, and you make a great point. That may have contributed some and probably did to the animated series not getting the kind of love that it deserved.
Which is an unfortunate scenario that I think was repeated later in the case of Green Lantern, the animated series. But but that's another topic for another time. Now, my thoughts on Steve Bloom and Cal Dodd are pretty much like yours. Like, Cal Dodd will always be the voice of Wolverine that I hear in my head whenever I'm reading any X-Men comics. Anytime I read him in a comic book, that's the voice I hear. But I will admit that there have been times whenever it would be Steve Bloom's voice that would come through if the characterization was right. And I think that that's the real difference between the two, is that they were both playing vastly different versions of the character, where Cal Dodd was playing the more like emotionally tortured, loner version of Wolverine. This version in Wolverine and the X-Men was much more assertive. He was more of a, he was more the leader type, and he also isn't burdened by the same kind of loneliness and longing that the 90s version was, because they don't play the romantic subplot or the romantic love triangle between Cyclops, Jean, and Wolverine. That's not part of this show. Mm-hmm. It's not even hinted at, really. It's like it's just understood that Cyclops and Jean were together, and Wolverine and Cyclops, you know, they don't really get along, but that doesn't seem to be the crux of their relationship as it was in the 90s X-Men show. They just seem to be a clash of personalities. And to me, I actually kind of like that better. I like it that, you know, they got that we're past that, that we just we have two guys who have very different leadership styles. They don't get along because of that. But for the sake of the team, they do find ways to put their differences aside. But when it comes to the iconic nature of the character, I do got to give it to Cal Dodd. He probably because he was first for me, and I mean, I think that has a lot to do with it, that I grew up with that. He was the first real exposure to Wolverine that I ever had, and that's why he stays in my mind as the definitive voice of the character. But like I said, I take nothing away from Steve Bloom, who has been really committed to this role. It seems like every time there's a new opportunity or a new piece of media that comes out that requires a voice for Wolverine, he seems to be, you know, he's the go-to guy, and he does a damn good job of it. But it's just, you know, stylistically, he's different from Cal Dodd, and that's fine. I think that what puts Dodd over for me is that at times in his performance, he seemed more genuinely passionate. I don't know, that comes through in the voice to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he seems like really invested in what he's performing. Like, the emotions are real. Like, he has more than two settings, which in Steve Bloom's case, there are times whenever he's super angry or he's sarcastically angry. And that works really well. But Cal Dodd actually would appear genuinely heartbroken at times. Like, he could pull that through the voice. He also had this this way of bringing out, I guess, a type of gallows dry humor that I really related to. And I think that probably played a big part in shaping my sense of humor today. So, So I dig the hell out of that. But speaking of differences, the story structure differences between this and the 90s X-Men series are pretty vast. So what differences did you notice in the types of storytelling that they did in the 90s versus how this series tells its story?
You know, the X-Men, the animated series, I think is probably both of them pulled from the comic.
Sure.
And I think like the 90s, of course, I would imagine that series to any, you know, diehard X-Men fans, probably one of their, it's either their top one or top two, you know, show, because I mean, it really was the comic put on the small screen.
That's true. It didn't change very much.
No, not very much. And in this series, you know, there was some change, but there wasn't, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to gauge which, you know, kind of who did it better or what, you know, the differences between the two, I think for me, of course, is anime style. I think the animation style to me, I like because it, of course, it's more current and, you know, there's, I'm sure there's technological leaps that we've had in doing animation as opposed to when it was done in the 90s, because, you know, that was, again, this might make some of the X-Men fans not, you know, happy, but I'm not bashing the animated series. Mm. But to me, the animation style for the 90s TV series was a little subpar sometimes. And what I mean by that is, if you look at shows that were out during that time as well, you know, there's some really, I mean, there's some, you know, I mean, if you go back and you look at like Thundercats, their animation style was beautiful. And the reason, I'm saying that, you know, the animation style for me in the 90s, that's the only problem I have with it. Even then, I mean, I'm not saying this now because, you know, I can go back and kind of, no, when I first started watching the show, I was bothered by it because I had seen, oh, well, they can do better. I mean, these other shows are, you know, and I think for me, that still is kind of one of those things about it that still to this day, even, I mean, it kind of bothers me. So between the two, you know, I think the animation style, of course, it's going to be better because, you know, there's more,
it's certainly more fluid.
And
it's cleaner too, because there are times where like the character designs are cleaner.
That's the perfect word that I want to say. It's cleaner.
And I mean, while I'm with you, I like the gritty style of the 90s, but there were times whenever it was so choppy and they would recycle a lot of animation cells in order to keep things going, I guess, or to fill time. And that's something that Wolverine the X-Men doesn't really seem to, doesn't really feel like it's guilty of it. It doesn't seem to have that issue at all. But for me, what I'm looking at in terms of their story structures, you know, Wolverine the X-Men did have this overarching narrative that flows from episode 1 all the way to episode 26. But it also relied more on self-contained episodes than the 90s show ever did. There would be one-off episodes that they may have a loose tie to the overall narrative, but there would still be a lot of those episodes that were just about developing certain characters. Like Wolverine had several Weapon X-based episodes. There were probably about two or three of those scattered throughout this season that were setting up his own subplot, but also developing his character. There was also one of my personal favorite episodes when he takes on the Hulk. It's a Wendigo episode that does play off of some familiar comic book source material, but it winds up being Wolverine recruited by Nick Fury of S.H.I.E.L.D., who looks like a cross between Sam Jackson and David Hasselhoff, if you can imagine those two actually being like mashed together as one human being. But they recruit him to go and take on the Hulk in Canada because Wolverine has done this before, and they figure, hey, you can go do this again. Turns out that it was all a pretty big setup that Bruce Banner was set up to take a fall here, that S.H.I.E.L.D. was responsible for the whole Wendigo outbreak and everything. And as Logan and Banner kind of work together and solve that mystery and get everything kind of contained at the end, I love the parting shot when it looks like Wolverine is going to punch Nick Fury in the face, but instead he punches Banner in the face. Banner hulks out and knocks Wolverine like for a mile, But Wolverine's just laughing at the end of it. And he's just like, good luck dealing with that, Fury. I was like, that's the Wolverine I know. That's a nice parting shot.
Yeah.
It's episodes like that that Wolverine the X-Men did far more than the 90s X-Men series did. I think Wolverine and the X-Men worked harder to fit in more of those X-Men stories by using a much more condensed style of storytelling. And if you look back at the 90s show and the first, like its initial four seasons, it was basically one long episode that would be separated by slight story arcs. Like they would do the Dark Phoenix saga, they would do Legacy, they would do Days of Future Past. But it was all connected. One story just invariably led to the other. And that's not exactly how Wolverine and the X-Men flows. Like, it has some of that, but that is not how the show is always structured.
Yeah.
It has the ability to bounce between both of those. So I guess, in that respect, it gives Wolverine and the X-Men a little bit of the edge because it can tell more stories in a less, a less decompressed way. Like, it's not decompressed storytelling like what the 90s X-Men show was, because they would drag stories out sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're... Like I said, I mean, you're taking a lot of the content from the comic at the time. And you got to think, too, that this was also close, I think, to when this is this was right after they had relaunched. They had launched their first new X book, X-Men, you know, which was a big deal back then.
It was Chris Claremont and Jim Lee.
Jim Lee.
Were the creative team on X-Men when that 90s series was running. And I mean, talk about, you know, capitalizing, talk about smart marketing on Marvel's part to have this incredible creative team on their comic. And then this 90s X-Men series developing the Claremont and Byrne era, but then also delving a bit into what Claremont and Jim Lee were doing. It had the look of the Jim Lee X-Men, and even a good bit, or pretty much the majority of that lineup, with the strength of writing from Claremont and Byrne era. So it's, I mean, that's a 1-2 punch if ever you could have asked for one. So it was set up for success, absolutely. It's, you know, kind of unfortunate that Wolverine and the X-Men had X-Men Origins Wolverine to fall back on. Oh, that was fantastic.
That was not good planning.
No.
You know.
It was probably a smart idea, but the movie was a turd, so that wound up basically shooting them in the foot. And I'm sure X-Men The Last Stand didn't really help all that much, because it was only like a year or so beforehand. And I mean, people were already kind of weary of X-Men after that one disappointed. And, I mean, I can't blame it, because I hate that movie, too. It's just so bad. But we can take a look at one other thing that, honestly, I think the 90s X-Men series has over this one, over Wolverine the X-Men, is the opening theme music. Like when you compare and contrast the two, which one sticks with you more?
I would have to say the 90s. To me, just the, and I think I like, that's the one of the openings to me that I you know, because it, you get it, and it's just like there's a whole cast, just tells you who's in it, you know, and the music over it, you know, is kind of, it gets stuck in your head. And out of the two, that one's my favorite.
It's fist pumping, isn't it? It's just like you know that music when it hits. It is iconic. It's as iconic to me as the Batman the Animated Series opening theme music, which was also the Danny Elfman theme from the Tim Burton Batman films. That music just, it just says X-Men. Now, I will say this, though. Wolverine and the X-Men's opening theme shares a lot in common with the X-Men theme that was written for the movies. It has,
right.
It has that orchestral setup and that that build and really nice crescendo there at the end. But as far as iconography is concerned, yeah, the '90s X-Men series has a theme song that is second, maybe only to Batman the Animated Series. That is just stellar work. I don't know that can ever be topped, but I'd like to think that maybe one day somebody's going to come up with a TV cartoon theme that's just going to blow that one out of the water. Hasn't happened yet, but
yeah, you know,
fingers crossed. Maybe one day we'll get it. Now, one other thing that we should talk about, because we touched on it a little bit earlier, but characterization is a big part of making any X-Men series work. So how did the characterizations of the supporting cast work for you? And were there any characters that that stood out to you as being particularly good, as in any of the X-Men, any of the villains, anybody that you were like, wow, I really dig how they're doing that?
I think that, as far as you're looking at the characters from both series, to me, I think the one that stood out, and he's stood out in kind of both series to me, and one that I was really happy to see that they kind of gave some time to, was Beast. Mm-hmm. Here's a character that, is of course is kind of what I used to always refer to him as, the brains and the heart of the group to an extent. I also kind of put Nightcrawler in that, in the heart part of this, of the group, because he's also, and I think, done pretty well, in both series. But I think Beast or Hank McCoy was my favorite in both. And, I think I really liked him a little bit more in the Wolverine series, because, he's working, he's the first one that Wolverine goes to and knows where he's at. And, Hank, I think, reluctantly kind of gets involved and, tries to do what he can to help Logan. And he's just always been, Hank's always been one of those characters to me that, even back in the original series, when I had picked up a few of the original series, nothing way down on the number list, of course, with any monetary value. But, I always found him unique, because everyone had some kind of, Hank's mutant power was he was real agile and he had big feet and, hands. He was kind of a unusual looking person. But it wasn't until he got the blue fur, when he experimented on himself, that, and enhanced his abilities a bit, that you really got to see the scientist behind, his character. And they really portrayed that in both series to an extent. So, I think Hank is or Beast is my favorite.
And
Nightcrawler coming up a good second.
Yeah, I will say I like the way that they handled Nightcrawler a little bit better in Wolverine and the X-Men than they did in the '90s. But they didn't really give Nightcrawler much screen time in that show. He was only in a few episodes, a handful of episodes here and there, and that's also the case here. But when he does show up, he does have a pretty good bit to do. I wish they'd allowed him to be a little bit more of the prankster, the Joker that he mm-hmm. that he is, that he's known for being, because he's one of the few characters to be able to make Wolverine laugh.
He really stood out, I think, probably more at X-Men Evolution than
that's a good point.
Yeah,
he was really good in that show.
Yeah, and at least he got some airtime. And you're right, he's. I remember, the eulogy that Wolverine gave for Kurt when he died was, you know, one of those, this really impacted him. This really hurt Logan to have to do this. But I mean, that was one of those real memorable, you know, and you're right. I mean, he was always the one that could kind of get Wolverine to crack a grin or maybe even laugh, you know?
Yeah. That was the role I love seeing Nightcrawler play. And it's something that he didn't get to do much of in either show, but in X-Men Evolution, yeah, he absolutely did. He was the prankster, the Joker, the fuzzy one, if you will. And I really appreciated them for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now in this show, I liked the portrayal of Beast as well, though I did miss the Shakespeare quotes. You know, that was one of my favorite things from the 90s take on the character, was he was very much in that Shakespearean actor mode, and I love that about him. But I really like the version of Kitty Pryde that we get in Wolverine and the X-Men. She is just a lot of fun to listen to see her on screen. They give her like some really great hero moments, and she's one of those that you know, gets to drop, you know, some really funny jokes, and especially her teamed up with Iceman. I thought that was you know, was pretty spot on between those two. The one character that didn't get enough to do in this show, one that it still bothers me to this day, is Storm. Like she's a vital part of the X-Men, and she was a huge part of the 90s X-Men series and X-Men Evolution. But in this show, she's basically window dressing. She's just kind of there.
She gets that treatment. I was just going to agree with you.
Yeah, it's the one episode that they really focus on her, like in the early going when they're putting the team back together. Even in that episode, she's there to be saved, which kind of sucks, you know.
She's the one that should be saving, because she's people don't realize what a powerhouse she is, and there's a lot of times where in comics, in the early days, they really didn't show that. But you know, it's one of those things that she's, and they've done a lot better since then. Don't get me wrong, but she's someone you don't trifle with.
And that that episode bothered me because it's also a complete waste of Shadow King. They throw him in there. They build him up as being like uber powerful, and then he's, you know, he's defeated, you know, by a telepath who's nowhere near his level. But that said, Emma Frost is also a big part of this show, and I actually really dig the version that they used. I think they nailed her character pretty well. And it's kind of funny when you look back on this show, like who produced it and when it was airing. This show didn't shy away from the gratuitous cleavage shots.
No.
Like between Emma Frost and Domino, it's kind of like, wow, all that's just hanging right out there, isn't it?
And this is a kid show, kind of, maybe?
Yeah, it is totally a kid show, but they didn't have any qualms about the low-cut V-neck tops. And
that's the problem with Emma Frost, though. Whenever you put her in another, you know, media or medium other than comics, you know, it's like the animator's like, oh, now we can just go nuts. We can just, you know.
It's one of those times that you'd think, though, that they would have like maybe redesigned the costume or the look.
She needs to stop looking like a hooker.
Yeah, I mean, she's got kind of a stripper thing going on
with her
costume. And it was the same deal, like, to a slightly lesser extent with Scarlet Witch. I'll say this, though. Their costumes are comic book accurate. Though that's probably not the best idea for a kid show. Maybe that should have been. At least they didn't do it to Kitty.
Yeah,
they did not do that to Kitty Pryde.
No, I mean, Emma Frost's costume, I mean, it worked back in the Byrne Claremont Hellfire Club origin and that time frame it worked and in the 90s. But she really, you know, they need to give her kind of an updated, let's not, you know, it's not about flaunting, you know.
Yeah, it's,
her.
Yeah. It's like gratuitous boobs just hanging around yeah. there. Maybe they should have thought that one through a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to say this, the characterization and the voice actor or the voice actress for Emma Frost was spot on. Like they totally mm-hmm. nailed the character. And Domino as well. That's another one that I will say that Domino wasn't one that I necessarily paid much attention to prior to this show.
Yeah.
But it made me see the potential and greatness in the character if she's written properly.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, there you go. Domino can be a really interesting and cool character. So that's something that I wanted to see more of, not just, you know, for her costume, whatever, but also because she's pretty much a badass, with the Brotherhood. But also a kind of a sympathetic character too. Like she's the lone voice of reason, on the Brotherhood and kind of Magneto-esque in her line of thinking. And that's the one other character that I can say, and I'm going to maybe make some people mad here, fans of the 90s X-Men show. I think that the version of Magneto and Wolverine and the X-Men was the superior take.
I'll agree with you there. Yeah.
He's much closer to the Ian McKellen take from the movies.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about him, because he sees the X-Men as potential allies if they could just be turned. And they really play up how much he respects Charles and even misses his friend when he's not around. And, I mean, they did do that in the 90s, but they would always play up Magneto's villainous side above all else. And after I learned about this other side to him, I started to prefer that. It made him much more relatable to me. There are other villains in this show that get played up. You know, you got Senator Kelly. You have the presence of Master Mold. Later on, you do get the Hellfire Club, we even get Mojo, a version of Mojo that is almost a carbon copy from the 90s X-Men show. But how many ways can you possibly do Mojo, right?
Right.
The version of Master Mold here is different from the 90s show. But, what were your thoughts on some of the villains? How did you think that they did by creating antagonists for this story?
Well, I mean, I enjoyed the Brotherhood, you know, of Evil Mutants. I thought those were, you know, done pretty well. And like you were talking about Master Mold, you know, seeing those characters were nice, you know. Don't always see those on, you know, and they don't always get used. You know, I like the fact that, you know, their characters, like you said, you know, we got to see Domino, which is a character that really, you know, maybe not a lot of people know. I mean, your X-Fans will know who she is, but it was one of those interesting characters that really, you know, came about around the same time as Deadpool and maybe even came out, maybe even first appeared, maybe when Deadpool first appeared there in X-Force. And, you know, it's always kind of connected to Cable. And I think they're even going to do, I think she's going to get cast. I think they're actually going to have a Domino character in the next Deadpool movie, I think.
Yep. She's definitely in.
But I love seeing, you know, the characters that aren't, of course, everyone knows that I have this love of being C-list and D-list and E-list characters. So, I mean, I love it when I see, even if they only have a few lines, it's just to see them like, you know, Polaris. I've always loved Polaris. And, didn't they finally confirm or she is a daughter of Magneto? I know that they've screwed around with Wanda and Pietro and saying, oh, well, they're, you know.
Yeah, they keep going back and forth on that one. I think
I hate that shit. Just leave it alone.
Yeah, they should just leave them as, you know, Magneto's three kids.
Right. I mean,
That's what they do on this show. They are his children.
And it works. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things where Marvel just makes dumb mistakes and changing things. But, yeah, Polaris, like I said, the Brotherhood, seeing, you know, like Avalanche and, of course, Blob, you know.
and there's great potential in the Polaris story arc that's happening mm-hmm. in this show, because while she's a minor character for a good bit of it, there comes a time when she's the heir apparent to Magneto because she has his yeah. powers. And mm-hmm. when you like, because part of this show does take place 20 years in the future, because as Professor X is in a coma, he's communicating with Wolverine from the far-flung future, and he's talking about this dystopian world that has occurred mm-hmm. while he's been asleep. And, of course, they go through all this process of trying to figure out how the world got to this point. And the big twist on what actually happened is a big crux of the show, and actually sets up what could have been a pretty tremendous second season.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we're real sorry to interrupt, but
no, go ahead.
It's Polaris. Isn't Polaris being cast in the X-Men show that's coming up?
Yes, Polaris will be part of the untitled. They're calling it. Some people have called it Gifted, but apparently the creators of the show said that's just kind of a working title, but that's not what the show is likely to be called. Mm-hmm. I do like that idea. I mean, I think they set up a potential good subplot for Wolverine and the X-Men Season 2 that could have built on Polaris and really taken her to the next level. So another reason to be sad that this show didn't get a Season 2, because they really did set up some future story arcs and subplots that would have been very, very fun to see them play out. But on that note, we've come to a point where I think we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the comic stories that influenced this show. We're going to talk about a little bit more into the animation style, some episodes that stood out to us, where we think the show might have gone in a second season, and a little bit more. So if you guys will just stick around, we'll be right back to talk a little bit more about Wolverine and the X-Men on this episode of The Mist and the Maligned. Stay right there.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bone Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceofNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Place to Be Nation Pop, welcome back. We are here, of course, on this edition of Sellers Points, The Mist and the Malign, taking a look at Wolverine and the X-Men, the animated show from 2009. And before the break, we talked a good bit about the makeup of the show, characters and characterizations and things of that nature. But as with any good comic book adaptation, every show has to pull from the source material. So let's take a look at some of that. Kelly, whenever you were watching the early parts of this show, what comic stories seem to have influenced this show the most to you?
I mean, if you, of course, talk about, you know, the episodes, you know, that we see a lot of this that they draw from. I think a lot of it has to do with some of the stuff that was done, in a sense, in the 90s. You know, some of the 90s... you know, you deal with the future. You know, that's one of the things that seems to be a recurring backdrop for the X-Men animated shows is kind of the future of mutants and humankind. And you see that in the episodes. You know, they did a lot with, you know, in the 90s you had, you know, Bishop and the whole, you know, future that he came from and how bad it was and coming back to try to stop it. You know, we see that and you know, the, like the Future X episode, you know, and there's, you know, you just, I think the future episodes to me are the ones that kind of stand out and, you see bits and pieces that they take from a lot of different of their a lot of source material from their different comic book series that they, you know, dealing with, you know, mutants being, you know, trying to rescue other mutants and, you know, the fact that, you know, you have the humans trying to build defenses against you know, the fear of mutant kind, you know, with Sentinels and all of that and you know, I think both of these shows do a real good job of kind of bringing those aspects from all of the different X-Men comics and bringing them to, you know, the animated versions or, you know, the on the small screen.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they are able to successfully combine two or three vastly different eras of X-Men. Like when Master Mold being like one of the big overarching story points of this show. He first appeared in December of 1965. He was originally created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. So Master Mold is like one of the oldest X-Men villains. And when you look at combining him with characters like Bishop, who didn't come around until 1991, he is, of course, created by Wilte Portacio and Jim Lee. He's the guys that created this this future X-Man, this guy who time travels from a dystopian future to the past to try and, you know, correct things. Of course, he doesn't time travel in this series because he's just a mutant in the future who has managed to survive in this this horrible environment. And he is an X-Man, but he's one of the of course the future X-Men. He's trying to keep the world, or trying to put the world back together after it's so wholly fallen apart. And I think that there are a number of other stories that are pulled from for this this particular series, especially the bit with the MRD. I think that that story that definitely heavily pulls from God Loves, Man Kills, which is a story that nearly every X-Men adaptation pulls from. It doesn't matter if it's animation or if it's live action; they have all pulled from that story to some degree. And there, of course, there's some of the Claremont and Byrne era in there too. In particular, the whole Jean Grey is missing and presumed dead arc. That's kind of a big story point for Claremont and Byrne. Of course, they don't do it exactly like that, but they do play off of some of those same themes. And you can tell that the influence from Claremont and Byrne was there. Same with the Hellfire Club stories. All those are a huge influence on the direction of the first season as a whole. And I think the part of the reason for those eras being like so heavily pulled from is because one of the lead writers on the show was Chris Yost. And prior to... he did this show prior to a long and pretty amazing run on the animated series Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes that would follow this one. A show that got... that managed to get two or three seasons out of it. Three seasons, I believe. It was a... fantastic Avenger show. It wound up being just an amazing Marvel TV show because it did have some of the X-Men in it, including Steve Bloom voicing the character of Logan and Wolverine again.
But
he also went on to have several little more Marvel writing gigs after this. And but Greg Johnson was actually the lead writer on this show, and one of the reasons I think people were expecting a more direct sequel to X-Men Evolution is because he was also one of the head writers of that show. So between Yost and Johnson, it's clear they have a deep love of X-Men lore and still wanted to put their own spin on things while respecting what's come before. Now, personally, I think they were pretty successful in that. I think that, you know, it took them maybe a few episodes to find their footing, but once they were on it, they were really on it. What was your impression of the writing on the show, and like they're pulling from like previous X-Men stories?
I thought the writing for both series, and especially for Wolverine and the X-Men, I think were nicely done. I mean, now, as I stated before, I think, you know, after a while, though, their stories were not keeping my attention. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't really put my finger on why or to what degree, you know, because that was years ago when I watched this show. And, you know, I can't really put my finger on other than just I know that I became disinterested in it. But after rewatching, you know, several of the episodes, I'm now more, you know, I guess curious to finish it out and see how it ended or how, you know, see how it went. But I don't think it's the writing style that got me out. I think it was the content at the time that just didn't catch me. And again, you know, the X-Men, the animated series, and both in this series itself, I think they both did a really good job drawing from the comics and putting those aspects into their shows and doing it in such a way that, you know, of course, your X-Men fans are going to go, I know where that came from. Wow, that's you know, and getting that kind of good feel, as I call it, when you're watching a show and you're like, oh, they pulled that from, you know, it's kind of that comic book giddiness that you get when you're watching a show and you see what the writers have done. And, you know, it makes you feel good because then you know that those people, you know, these writers are really and truthfully trying to kind of, they're doing this for the comic book fan, not just, let's just get a show and put it out there. You know, they're really trying to entertain you.
And, it is a highly entertaining show. There are aspects of it. Like I said, I kind of agree with you at the beginning. It has a little bit of a shaky footing to begin with, but as it goes, it really does. It hits a good stride, and I'm happy to hear that you're going to continue watching it, like finish it out, because I think you're really going to be impressed by the latter half.
Go ahead. I was going to say I plan to, whenever we hit the hiatus of our mutual love shows that we're watching, and you know, have kind of some filler time to watch that.
But let's talk about, we got, I think we both have some episodes of this show that we both enjoyed, or the types of episodes that we enjoyed from it the most. I mentioned one earlier. It was the episode 7, Wolverine versus the Hulk.
Yes.
That was a really great episode that teased some of the Weapon X connections of Wolverine. It kind of called back to his time with that group, but also his, you know, his first appearance in the comics was tracking and trying to hunt down the Incredible Hulk. So that they did kind of a sequel to that, rather than just doing a straight riff on it, was really good to me. I thought it was done really well, and has, like I said, one of the funniest endings, and maybe the funniest ending to any episode of this show.
Mm-hmm.
There are others too, like that. Another one that calls back to his Weapon X days and continues that subplot was episode 14. Oddly enough, like 7 episodes later, they do an episode called Stolen Lives. That also incorporates Mystique and like Sabretooth. Though Sabretooth had appeared earlier in the series, when Wolverine is trying to recover parts of his past, he encounters Maverick and Maverick's daughter, and he has this memory of trying to recapture Maverick for the Weapon X, and what would probably, it was being teased as, would ultimately become Alpha Flight. And this was the first time that we also saw Sabretooth in the series, mostly setting him up through some flashback, but then we also see him in the present day. And Stolen Lives, episode 14, builds on the relationship between Logan and Mystique, and even drops in a more than subtle hint that these two were at one time romantically involved. And you also see the first and only appearance in this series of X-23, and a setup for what could potentially be a larger story arc for her, and what, you know, maybe could have been a season 2. We would like to have, you know, thought that was possible. Now I've actually got the series, the last few episodes playing in the background while we're recording this, and I'm reminded of one other character that the character was written okay, and his characterization is fine, but man, the accent, the Cajun accent for Gambit in this show was a little wonky at times to me.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't quite there.
Yeah, I think that's one of the harder accents to really pull off and it not sound over the top. You know, I would think that sounds that as an accent goes, you know, when an actor has to pull off an accent, that seems like that might be a hard one to do, especially, I mean, even so for a voice actor.
It certainly is, unless you are Cajun, you know.
Yeah, yeah, unless you have the accent naturally, you know.
Though you got to give it credit to the guy on the 90s X-Men animated show. I thought he nailed it. I thought he was great. But this version of Gambit, though, I like the character. I like the characterization of him. I think they wrote him really well. I just think that the voice actor was at times having a little trouble pulling off the proper Cajun accent.
Yeah.
But that said, you know, his episodes are exciting. Like, they do have some fun stuff in them, and I like that he's actually used to advance some of the main plot. So he's not just, you know, he's not just thrown in there for we don't have Gambit for Gambit's sake. We have Gambit in there to drive a story point home that actually makes sense for the overall series.
Right.
Unlike, you know, sometimes a character like, let's say Juggernaut, he's thrown in this series too, but he is totally just thrown in there for window dressing. Like, he's...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's...
He's the unstoppable Juggernaut, yet he's largely stopped through all of his appearances. He's not really moving. We don't see him do all that much. Now, that's neither here nor there. I mean, those episodes I thought were good, and of course, I think that the last four episodes of the show might actually be the strongest, because that's when all the story threads that have gone on throughout the show get pulled together, and you see the bigger picture, and then it puts a whole new spin on the front end of the season, and that's something that I really appreciate when a show can do. Even some of the smaller episodes, ones that you thought were maybe just filler or something like that, it turns out, no, they're not. Every episode of the show has something to contribute to either a character's motivations, their own individual arc, or there are even big plot things that are playing in the background that you might not necessarily realize. So it's one of those shows that pulls that big magic trick there at the end. So I'm really appreciative of a show that, you know, has the guts to try something like that and to actually pull it off. So,
right.
Good on them in my book for that. But speaking of like where this show could go in a season two, where would you like them to have gone with a second season? What kind of stories would you like to have seen? And is there an overarching, like a big plot idea that you think would have worked for season two?
As far as, you know, doing a second season, I mean, there's a lot. I would have liked to have seen maybe, and it's only because I really enjoyed when they first did this story arc, was the Age of Apocalypse. You know, I'd love to revisit that again and get to see that.
It's really funny you should say that, because that's a big tease at the end of this season.
Interesting.
The Age of Apocalypse is absolutely where they should have gone. I also think that they would have gone for something more, even more akin to Days of Future Past.
And
maybe even like with him, because they do so many different stories within. I think that they also could have done a spin on Legacy Virus. Since initially, at the end of this first season, they did announce a season two. But then it was canceled. They just decided not to do it. But before they announced that, they said that Colossus was going to come back and be a major part of season two. Nightcrawler was also expected to take on more of an active role, be more of a central character. So I was like, yeah, that actually seems like something they're going for. Like, Age of Apocalypse, Days of Future Past, and Legacy Virus. All kind of cross-pollinating into a new original story, because that's how this show works. And that's where I would have preferred they go with it anyway, had a second season come to be. And I'd also like to think they'd keep following up on some of the Weapon X stuff they started in season one. Because in that that episode that introduces X-23, they also hint at some major ties to the comic story Origin. And, of course, if X-23 has already been introduced, we all have a pretty good idea of where that could go. She's a very popular character, and I love the animation they did for her too. Like she was a big surprise whenever they got to that episode. Whenever she appears, I was like, "Whoa! Did not see that coming." Did not know X-23 was even going to be mentioned in this series. But they she gets a pretty cool reveal scene that was a good bit of groundwork laying for the future of this show. And it's really unfortunate that we're not going to get to see that. Well, we say we're not going to get to see it, but, you know, if there was enough of a groundswell for it, you know, maybe the show could come back. Hell, Young Justice is getting a third season. So,
yeah.
If more people would check this show out, there's a possibility. Sadly, it's not streaming anywhere.
Yeah.
It used to be. It used to be on Netflix for a long time, but has sadly been removed, and that is highly unfortunate. Because I think this show would benefit, especially like right now with a kind of a renewed interest in all things Wolverine, thanks to a certain film that we're going to mention a little bit later. I think this is a prime time for people to check this show out. I think that they'd be very, very excited by the things that are done here. But that said, Kelly, would you recommend this show to X-Men fans? And how well do you feel it treated the character of Wolverine specifically?
I would definitely recommend the show to any Wolverine fan and really to any comic book fan, you know, that enjoys seeing the comic characters kind of brought to life on the small screen. And I think they did a great job pulling and doing Wolverine the way as best as you can do him on the, you know, animated, you know, in an animated show. Like I said, if they hadn't have done that crappy Wolverine Origins film, this series probably would have gotten a second season. And overall, like I said earlier, it did a good job doing and portraying the characters. I think the way they were or where they are in the comic book series that they're derived from.
And I'm going to echo that because I would absolutely recommend the show. I mean, I wouldn't have bought you a Blu-ray copy of it if I didn't think that it was worth your time. I'm for sure recommending this to anybody who, you know, kind of misses that 1990s X-Men show. I think, you know, this show is 26 episodes in its first season. I mean, that's a full season for an animated show. It's, you know, it's got a lot of that that fun intrigue that we got in the 90s show, but it's a bit more of a compressed style of storytelling so that they can get to more of it. And, yes, Wolverine is very much the focus. So if you're a Wolverine fan and you haven't watched this show, you absolutely should, because this is a show I think that you'll really appreciate. And, you know, even if you're not a Wolverine fan, I think that people would, if you're a comics fan, X-Men fan at all, I think that you will appreciate the show. Good friend of the podcast, good friend of ours, Mr. Tim Capel, who is the biggest Cyclops fan in the world, ergo, he ain't the biggest Wolverine fan in the world, was talking with me on Twitter just recently about his deep love of this show. Even he, as Cyclops, you know, loyalist, thinks that Wolverine and the X-Men is a really, really good X-Men show. So, you guys should definitely take mine, Kelly, and Tim's advice and go check that show out. You can find it on Blu-ray on Amazon. It's pretty reasonably priced there. You can also buy the episodes digitally. They have the entire series. Well worth the investment in that one. I think you guys would absolutely like it. It's unfortunate that people missed this one, but I think the critical reactions and certainly our reactions would say that this one is not nearly the maligned series. This one was pretty much just missed.
Oh, yeah.
Just missed. Yeah. And that's unfortunate. And it certainly missed today because we certainly would like to see more of this followed up on. So that said, that kind of brings us to the end of talking about Wolverine and the X-Men. But there's one thing that we did want to touch on before we go. And that was that a little movie came out at the beginning of this month. And we all got to go see it with some of our other Place to Be Nation pop cohorts. The ladies over on Geek and Sassy, Jenny and Miranda, as well as our buddy Greg from the Hard Traveling Fanboys. We were all in attendance to watch Logan at a screening on an opening the day after it opened on the Saturday. And I got to tell you, I think that movie made an impression. Kelly, what did you think of Logan, and how would you rate it as Hugh Jackman's final performance of the character?
I think it was outstanding. And I think as far as and you know, I have my own ratings of the Marvel films, that my top Marvel film all the way down to literally Logan has, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy. It didn't beat out that, but Logan is now my number two Marvel film.
And that's high praise from somebody who doesn't necessarily care for the X-Men films.
Yeah. And literally, this film has, to me, made up for all of the bullshit that literally, you know, has been thrown out there. And, you know, they're pretty damn lucky that they did this, because this is a good ending for Hugh's story and a great beginning for Laura's story. If they're smart, they'll do that. They won't. Let's just recast Wolverine. Let's go with her and let's run her story. That's what I think they should do. But, yes. You know, it is a tremendous X-Men film. I mean, overall, it's about an X-Men. It's about Wolverine and, you know, Professor X, Caliban, they're all – it's just great. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you need to go see it.
Those three actors were just powerhouses throughout the entire film. The Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, I think, did save the best for last when it came to their performances, because Logan was absolutely it. They just nailed it. I was quite literally blown away by how good they both were, and especially after all this time, because they've been playing these characters since the year 2000. I mean, they put in 17 years, you know, through all those movies, and it's just amazing that they still put that much effort into it, that, you know, you can't help but watch them. I mean, we're going to talk, you know, a lot about Hugh Jackman's performance, and I got to tell you, I think it was Oscar worthy, honestly. But Patrick Stewart broke my heart. You know, that scene when he's laying in bed talking about how he had a really great day and didn't feel like he deserved it, and you start to, like, when he's telling his story of what happened with him and like why the X-Men aren't around. It's heartbreaking, man. It will move you. Like if you've ever had an emotional attachment to these characters at all, it's one of those that just, like, it's a gut punch. But big credit to Daphne Keene, who plays Laura or X-23. I think that we've all been very critical of child actors in the modern era because it's so hard to find really good child actors. but hot damn, she's good.
And she acted a good halfway through this film without uttering a word and using what I can only account for is a body language. And she
nailed facial expressions.
She nailed every one of them. I didn't have to hear her voice. I could just look at her and go, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And she had, it was mentioned on the Hard Traveling Fanboys review of the movie, but I gotta echo it that she had one of the most badass popping of the first popping of the claws scene ever. The first time we see Wolverine pop his claws in the first X-Men movie was pretty badass, but I Daphne Keene's Laura got a one that was even better. That was just tremendous, and yeah, they set up a good future for that character. So I'm hoping, like you said, that we get to see more of her. They need to follow up on what was done in Logan, and it'll be a tragedy if this movie doesn't get some Oscar nomination for directing, especially from James Mangold. My God, he directed the hell out of this movie. And of course, from the performance side, from pretty much all of the main cast, every one of them just hit it out of the park, man. This is an instant classic. This is an all-timer. Right up there, like, I love X2 as a performance from Jackman, as a story and everything, but hot damn, Logan may have just gone over it. I need to see it again before I can really make that distinction, because I have only seen it the one time, but it left me moved, and that is an accomplishment for any superhero film to do. Like, I can't remember feeling like that emotionally moved by a superhero film since 2008's The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
This one is right up there with that. So, but with that, I think that brings us to the end of another edition of the Sellers Points podcast. This was our look back at the 2009 animated series Wolverine and the X-Men, and this closes out our Wolverine month. A whole month-long celebration, talking about anything and everything Wolverine. So, Kelly, any final words on this series before we send it off?
No, I think we've pretty much hit all the marks.
Yes, we have. And when we come back next month, we will be looking at a couple of different things. We are going to do our top to bottom in our next episode, because we've got enough movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe now to rank our individual top fives and our individual bottom fives. So that's what we're going to do in the next episode. We're going to go from top to bottom of the MCU, ranking our top five and bottoms. And then in our second episode of April, we're going to do something a bit different, something we've never done before. We're going to be doing the first ever Sellers Points Quarterly, where we are going to look back at this first quarter of 2017 in comics. So we're going to be talking about the books that we've been reading, the series we're loving, maybe the series we've dropped, how we think comics is doing. You know, not just in the publishing page, but also in film and in television, because there's a lot to talk about there too. But we'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about what we're looking forward to coming up in the year, because we've got solicits out, usually running 3 months ahead. So we'll be able to look forward and back at 2017 so far. And we'll be joined by a couple special guests on that episode, who we will be announcing on the next edition of Sellers Points. But for you guys who just can't get enough of my voice, all two of you, I will actually be joining the Hard Traveling Fanboys for their next two episodes. Well, I say next two episodes. We're going to be recording pretty soon their giant size episode that they have mentioned on their show, where we're going to be taking a look at the first year of DC Comics Rebirth. We're going to be seeing where we are with that, how it's been going, you know, our highs and lows and all that good stuff. And then we're going to be coming to you, quote unquote, I'm going to air quote this, live, because it's totally not, it's going to be recorded, but live from Orlando, Florida, from the site of WrestleMania 33, as we take a look at the amazing, outstanding, classic superhero film, The Avengers, for the ending of the Hard Travelers for Hire Phase 1 MCU. But that will be coming up in a couple of weeks, so be on the lookout for both of those. And while you're at it, while you're here on Place to Be Nation Pop, we mentioned Tim Capel earlier. You guys need to go check out what he and Todd Weber are doing with their Chris Claremont and John Byrne X-Men era read-through, because I got to tell you, it's even more entertaining to have those comic stories told to you with their commentary than it is to even go back and read them. Although you should totally go back and read them on the wonderful, the illustrious, no shame in this plug, the Marvel Unlimited app. One of the best investments you can ever possibly make. And of course, while you're at it, there's plenty of other podcasts here on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed. Our friends, Jenny and Miranda, they're killing it over there on the, Geek and Sassy. You guys never need to miss an episode of that. It's so much fun to listen to those girls. Just totally geek out of the things they love. I laugh every time. And we hope that that you guys will continue listening to our show, because me and Kelly are entertaining as hell. At least I think so. And I didn't make him say at least not even once this episode.
Nope.
Not once.
Mark it down in your calendars, folks.
Well, shit. I feel like the folks have been cheated a little bit. You want to give them one before we go? That was him both fulfilling that and objecting to it at the same time, folks. So that is your most entertaining moment of the week. And with that, we're going to call this one done. And we hope we will hear, we'll see you, not see you. We'll hope you'll hear us the next time around. See, I'm not the only, Greg's not the only one who can be tripped up by his own words. I can do that with the best of them. So until next time, folks, we'll see you later.
See ya.